Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
The state's Republican Party chair is angered over the news that a commission to create a public campaign finance system for New York State will issue its report on Thanksgiving Eve, traditionally a time when politicians release items they want to downplay. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The commission, which held its last meeting on a state holiday, is scheduled to release its final report the day before Thanksgiving. It will be on how to structure a public campaign finance system for statewide elected officials, including governor and attorney general, and for state Senate and assembly seats. State Republican Party Chair Nick Langworthy says it's a deliberate attempt to hide the results of the report by releasing it when the vast majority of New Yorkers will be preparing for a major holiday.
And they're hoping, as always, to sneak this through in a news cycle while people are busy preparing for their holidays. Then lawmakers and the public will have a mere 3 weeks to review the findings and to come up with any changes before they automatically become law. This is like how third world countries run their governments. I mean, we have unelected bureaucrats deciding on the future because legislators in the majorities of the two bodies and a governor don't want the culpability to do the hard work, and that's to make the actual decision.
Under the rules of the commission decided in the budget in late March, the legislature has until December 22nd to act to override the commission's recommendations, or they automatically become law. The head of the state's Democratic Party, Jay Jacobs, was appointed by Governor Andrew Cuomo to be on the commission, and he's acted as its de facto chair. The Albany Times Union recently reported that Cuomo and the legislature changed rules that prohibited party chairs from serving on policymaking commissions. Cuomo controls the Democratic Party in New York. Langworthy says the governor is pulling the strings on the commission.
He's obviously orchestrating and puppeteering every damn bit of this behind the scenes.
The commission has also been given the powers to make other changes in election procedures, including banning fusion voting or the ability of major party candidates to run on multiple minor party lines. The GOP supports the cross-party endorsements. Langworthy says it has often benefited Republican candidates to also run on other lines like the Conservative Party line. He accuses Cuomo of trying to get rid of fusion voting because the governor has feuded with the left-leaning Working Families Party, and he's trying to get back at them. Working Families endorsed Cuomo's primary opponent, actor Cynthia Nixon, in last year's elections.
This is to settle scores from 2018 with his enemies in the Working Families Party.
The governor has said he's neutral on whether fusion voting should end.
I don't have any recommendation to the commission. They should use their own independent judgment.
Cuomo spoke in September. Democratic Party Chair Jacobs is an opponent of fusion voting, and in a recent commission hearing, he called the practice unpleasantly corrupting. Cuomo's senior advisor, Rich Azzopardi, responding to Langworthy's comments, maintains that the governor is committed to a true public campaign finance system.
The governor proposed public financing every year, and with this commission, it's got to get done once and for all. Its charge is to create the strongest system possible, and the members appointed all bring their expertise and experience on the subject matter.
And as a party took a shot at Langworthy, saying his party's record of winning elections is poor, and he says maybe that's why the GOP chair, unlike Jacobs, was not appointed to serve on the commission. The Republicans are not alone in their concern about the Thanksgiving Eve release of the commission report. Government reform groups express dismay as well. Reinvent Albany says the planned release date does not allow for adequate review. Reinvent Albany and other reform groups have been pressing the commission to release a draft report for the public to see in early November. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, Governor Andrew Cuomo this week signed a law that restricts nonprofit corporations from endorsing or opposing any political candidate. Quote, "For too long, we have listened to the Trump administration threaten to remove common sense protections prohibiting tax-exempt organizations from engaging in inappropriate political activities, New Yorkers have a right to free and fair elections, and this law will further protect our democracy from unjustified interferences once and for all.
David, this is a very complicated thing. Obviously, freedom of speech, freedom of action is very important. Not-for-profit corporations should probably not be endorsing people in elections. I know we would never do that. But it is important to remember that when politicians start saying people have no right to endorse, people have no right to act in a particular way, it bears watching.
We're watching the first stage of early voting that's happening in New York as we talk here. It's before Saturday, that day that it begins, but nonetheless, New York Attorney General Tish James led off a rally in New York City to bring attention to the new law, which permits 9 additional days for voters to cast a ballot. You and I have talked about early voting for a long time, and now we have it in New York.
Well, we do know that when you restrict voting to a single day, there are people who can't get away to do that. If you're flipping hamburgers and you're making a few dollars an hour or $9 an hour or whatever, it's very hard to do that. So when you expand the voting franchise, I tell you right now, it's going to help people who cannot often get away to vote. It will increase the number of people who vote. That's something you really want to do. But in my opinion, the Democrats will do better under this than the Republicans. After all, if you have a lot of money, you're more likely to be able to get away. If you have no money and you're working for a minimum wage, you know, you can't. So we know that this is going to help Democrats. The more it happens, the more it will help. If you do it by mail, if you do expand the number of days, it will all be good for public policy. There's no question people will vote. Less than half the people vote, or just about half the people vote for president of the United States, our most important election, I suppose. And there's reasons for that. So if you expand the franchise, more people will vote. The reason that Republicans are almost always against that is because they know they're going to get hurt.
The state's Republican Party chair, Alan, this week, that's Nick Langworthy, somebody you've talked to many times, is angered over the news that a commission to create a public campaign finance system for New York State will issue its report on Thanksgiving Eve, traditionally a time when politicians release items that they want to downplay.
Thanksgiving Day is a day when people put stuff out and newspapers basically publish stuff, you know, they've been working on, but people aren't going to read. I remember I was once the subject of a really unfair article, and they worked on it for a long time, and they couldn't get anything, and so they put it out on Thanksgiving Day. I know that. And so the point you're making, you know, is a very good one. But we do know that this commission that has been set up to study public financing has some tough things involved with it. One of them, of course, is instead of just doing a report on how to publicly financed campaigns like New York City has with such success, there's a poison pill in the report. And that poison pill has to do with not letting candidates run on more than one party line, which many people see as a direct threat to the Working Families Party, who endorsed somebody other than Governor Cuomo in the primary. And their accusation is that this is a get-even move. So if this unpopular thing is going to happen, you put it out on Thanksgiving Day.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is introducing legislation intended to help rural communities access federal government grants for long-term projects. She was at Clinton Community College in Plattsburgh this week to discuss how it would help initiatives like the school's Institute for Advanced Manufacturing. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
Senator Gillibrand took a quick tour of the Institute for Advanced Manufacturing, a 30,000-square-foot facility that opened in 2017 on the Clinton Community College campus that partners with the region's manufacturers to provide technology and workforce education.
I'm so excited to see it. I literally use this example all across the country, and I've seen where the advanced welding is now. It's fabulous. What other stuff do they teach here?
They do laser printing. They also do the, right behind you, the robotics.
See, I'm so excited to see what you're doing here.
New York's junior U.S. senator then described how legislation she is introducing would help initiatives like the Institute be funded in rural areas across New York and the nation. The Democrat says the Rebuild Rural America Act would create a $50 billion grant program to specifically target rural regions.
Federal grants are often too narrow and inflexible to support the development needs of rural communities. Our system simply doesn't work for rural communities. This bill would level the playing field for rural communities by overhauling our current federal funding models. The block grants would be flexible, allowing the communities to address a wide range of issues and putting the decision-making back into the hands of the community members themselves. It would empower communities to invest across a variety of industries to address complex challenges a region may face and help them to grow their economies.
North Country Chamber President Gary Douglas says many federal development programs are tilted toward urban areas, and this bill would help rural development opportunities.
While conceptually they were open to areas like ours, you could never effectively compete. You could never compete with the metro areas with their numbers and the way things were skewed. She has, in recent years, changed language, done amendments, added programs that are directed to rural regions.
The bill includes the formation of regional rural partnership councils. Gillibrand says the concept predates New York's regional economic development councils and is partly based on her past experiences with North Country officials.
We're calling for regional rural partnership councils made up of a cross-section of local leaders, including elected officials, economic development organizations, cooperatives, higher ed, and foundations. That's what we've been doing in the North Country for my entire 12 years in public service. So frankly, the idea came from here. And it is the best model, because every time we come up with what's the best way to invest money locally, it's already agreed upon. All the local leaders have already bought in. All the local employers have already bought in. The community colleges have bought in, and the state schools have bought in. So this is what works. And so it's really based on what the North Country, frankly, has been doing since I started out as a House member in 2006.
Clinton Community College President Ray DePasquale is enthusiastic that the bill builds in long-term sustainability for grants.
The ability to be able to plan ahead and say, we've got this funding for 5 years, potentially 10 years, is what is so critical, because so often we'll get a grant, it's for 1 year or 2 years, and then the funding goes away and you can't sustain it. This bill would allow $50 billion to be infused into the United States and give us sustainability that whatever we're doing, if we're hiring new instruction, if we're providing training, that people can then begin to plan knowing that that funding will be sustained for multiple years.
Senator Gillibrand also outlined the Rebuild Rural America Act during a visit to Hudson, New York with Congressman Antonio Delgado earlier Monday. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has announced the completion of a study by the companies at the center of the investigation into contaminated water in Hoosick Falls. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports the study examines possible options for a new municipal drinking water source.
The municipal water supply study was completed by Saint-Gobain and Honeywell. The two companies are at the center of the investigation begun in 2016 into the PFAS contamination of water supplies in the Rensselaer County Village. Currently, the village water system is treated with a filter system installed by the companies as part of their consent agreement with the state. The report, completed by the companies at the direction of DEC, contains 5 separate options for consideration, and the public has 30 days to offer input. Sean Mahar is DEC Chief of Staff.
Our goal here is to hear from the community on the options that the companies have found and to provide us feedback on what they see in this report.
Options for new water sources outlined in the report include a new groundwater source in the Hoosick River Valley, surface water via a transmission line from the Tom Hanek Reservoir owned by the City of Troy to the village, and a connection to the City of Troy municipal water system. Another option, maintaining the status quo by using the village's existing water supply and maintaining the filtration system. A fifth option would involve a remedial action to prevent any future contamination emanating from Saint-Gobain's McCaffrey Street facility from reaching the village's existing wellfield. Hoosick Falls Mayor Rob Allen says he does not have a preference for any plan at this point and needs more time to review the report.
What can't be understated is how important this moment is to our community. It's a big decision that has to be made. What we eventually will decide is going to set the trajectory for our community and its image for the next 100 years and beyond.
City officials in Troy have spoken in favor of Hoosick Falls utilizing the Tom Hanek Reservoir. Town of Hoosick Supervisor Mark Serdam says he's interested to see what village residents prefer. He said he's spoken to Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin about the Tom Hanek option, saying it presents an opportunity for economic development, too.
I did tell him one time, I'll support it if we can put a gas line in the hole next to it. I'm kind of looking for the economics of it.
Judith Enck, former EPA Region 2 administrator, warned the public not to settle for the cheapest option.
For the long-term economic viability of this community, there's no question in my mind that the water source should be a reservoir, also a surface water source, so it's not at risk of contamination like many groundwater sources are.
Enck prefers a new surface water source because PFAS chemicals spread quickly through groundwater and remain in an environment.
So while you may have a groundwater source that is not contaminated today, that may not be the case in 5 or 10 years.
Sean Mahar at DEC says the agency has no preference of action at this time.
We have not prejudged any of the options in this report because, as we've told the community all along, our goal was to hear from them before we selected any options or further remediation efforts.
Mayor Allen wants village residents to read the report for themselves.
We as a community need to be looking over this and trying to understand what we can, and we need to show up in strong numbers and with strong interest at the Wednesday, October 23rd event that's going to be held at Hoosick Falls Central School at 6 o'clock.
There, DEC will join the town, village, and Hoosick Falls Community Participation Work Group. Two availability sessions with DEC will also be held that day at the school at 3 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. DEC will accept comments on the report until November 18th. For more information, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Senator David Carlucci made it official this week. He'll run to replace fellow Democrat Nita Lowey, who is not seeking re-election to the U.S. House after 16 terms. He joins a few other Democrats already in the field. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spoke with Carlucci shortly after he made the announcement via video.
Lowey's October 10th announcement came as a surprise. In Congress since 1989, she currently chairs the House Appropriations Committee, the first woman to do so. Carlucci explains why he is running.
I believe we need someone to go to Washington to fight for the people of Rockland and Westchester counties. I have a record of delivering results for the people I serve and have never shied away from a tough fight, whether it's funding for our schools or prescription drugs for our seniors or a property tax exemption for our veterans. I think the issue is about affordability and making sure that we have a true progressive in Washington that's fighting to make sure we make Rockland and Westchester more affordable. This year in the state legislature, after I was reelected, I was able to pass more legislation to make it to the governor's desk than any other lawmaker in the state of New York.
Assemblyman David Buchwald announced via video October 13th he was launching a bid.
You can never replace Nita Lowey, but we can send someone to Washington with her integrity, progressive spirit, and true blue Democratic voice. I'm David Buchwald. I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud progressive. And I'd be honored to serve as your...
And Rockland County native Mondaire Jones had already announced a run in July when he thought he would face Lowy. With Carlucci in the running, Jones is pouncing on the state senator's membership with the now-dissolved Independent Democratic Conference, a breakaway group of Democrats that often voted with the Republicans. Carlucci says the IDC is in the past.
Well, yeah, people will be talking a lot about the past. I mean, my opponents complaining about the past, and I'm focused on the present and the future. And since the dissolvement of the IDC, I've worked with my Senate colleagues, any other lawmaker in the state of New York. I've been the one with the record to pass marriage equality, to raise the minimum wage, to combat climate control, to pass gender, to pass the green light bill to make sure that undocumented brothers and sisters have access to a driver's license. So people can talk about this and that. I have a record that backs up my progressive credentials, and more than that, my ability to serve the people of the Hudson Valley. So while others talk, I do, and I'm going to continue to do that and push my record of results and show people that if you give me the chance to serve you, I won't let you down.
But Jones says Carlucci's IDC affiliation helped block legislation important to him as a gay black man. Over the weekend, Jones opened an office in Sleepy Hollow in Westchester County. This comes after he says his campaign topped $218,000 in third quarter fundraising. If elected, Carlucci says he would work to combat climate change and President Trump's 2017 tax overhaul that curtailed the state and local tax, or SALT deduction, and work for health care for all and gun safety. Meantime, he welcomes a burgeoning primary field.
I think the more voices in the debate, the better. We have to make sure that everyone that thinks that they can do a better job, that their voice is heard and let the voters decide. I think that that is healthy for the democratic process. It's healthy for democracy. And that's why people might not agree with me, but I'm going to tell you where I stand and tell you the issues that I think are important. And I hope that other people, that if they think they can do the job as good or better than Congresswoman Lowy, then they should step up and enter the debate as well. I'm willing to put it on the line. With my record, with the ability to deliver results, I think it's very important that we encourage people to run for office.
The 17th District includes all of Rockland County and part of Westchester.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
The University at Albany is teaming up with Capital Region BOCES to bring a new weather forecasting tool to school districts. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King with more.
The Center of Excellence in Weather and Climate Analytics Extreme Weather Risk Assessment Dashboard includes hour-by-hour forecasts for snow, rain, sleet, wind gusts, and more. Capital Region BOCES Senior Executive Officer Joseph Dragroni, a former superintendent in Ballston Spa, says the tool will provide school officials with more accurate and consistent data when determining snowfall, school closures, and delays this winter.
You're on the phone, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning. I'm hearing 4 to 6. I'm hearing 6 to 8. I'm hearing it's stopping by 10. I thought it was going to stop by 9. You can't base these judgments on lots of different inputs that are contradicting each other. So to be able to inform the superintendents with this is very exciting.
Dragoni adds the dashboard can also help schools navigate decisions regarding after-school activities, outdoor classes, and early dismissals. So how does it work? The tool compiles data from both the National Weather Service and the New York State MESANET, which UAlbany scientists helped develop in 2014. The MESANET consists of 126 weather stations across the state, which update the UAlbany headquarters every 5 minutes. Standing in front of the dashboard's many charts, COE and MESANET scientist Nick Basil demonstrates how each table lays out the likelihood of a given weather event, say rain, over the next 15 hours.
And then you see a different amount. So any meaning more than zero, more than a tenth of an inch, more than a half an inch, more than an inch. If that condition is likely to happen, you'll see a filled in color with a likelihood of low, medium, high, meaning there's a chance to, yeah, it definitely could happen, to, okay, it's very likely to happen in your area.
In other words, a forecast colored red for more than an inch of rain between 10 and 11 a.m. would be interpreted as highly probable. Meanwhile, a blue or blank forecast in the same square would mean the odds of receiving over an inch of rain are low or unlikely. If that still sounds confusing, rest assured, the COE offers training to superintendents before the tool's implementation. A total of 6 BOCES regions across New York, over 150 school districts, are piloting the dashboard so far. Basil says officials can see forecasts laid out over maps and even tap into cameras at Mesonet weather stations around their district. And each dashboard is customized for each district's individual needs.
New York is impacted by some of the largest variety of weather. So for our western BOCES, you know, they get lake effect snow. For our southern BOCES, they might have to worry about hurricanes making landfall. And then other BOCES might have people up in higher elevation, the Catskills, but also schools in lower elevations like the Hudson. And that can really, you know, change the weather. Maybe higher elevations are getting heavy snow, lower elevations are getting just a wet rain.
COE Director Christopher Thorncroft says he expects several more BOCES regions to join in the next few months. Thorncroft says the COE is working with a number of weather-sensitive industries in the capital region and isn't limited to school districts.
Utility companies have to make decisions of an upcoming extreme weather event, a snow event or an icing event. They have to decide how many crews they need to keep on, whether they need to bring crews from out of state to deal with weather. Agriculture is another sector we're moving into. You know, they're very sensitive to weather. And also renewable energy. Weather information is going to be an important part of enabling the utility of renewables in New York State.
You can find out more about the BOCES regions using the tool at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jessie King.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1943, or just listen or podcast on the web, wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.